good morning or afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this show. You know, I didn't occur today is kind of an anniversary for me that's important to me, but and it's going to show my age too because I'm old as fuck. But 27 years ago today, I saw my first ever Pearl Jam show at South Park Meadows in Austin, Texas. It was their famous anti-Ticketmaster tour where they sold the tickets to their own outlet and they had to reschedule shows. It was kind of crazy. Play venues that weren't Ticketmaster related. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, we're not really a music podcast, but as much as movies are important to our lives and things that we discuss, music's very important to me too. And especially that band, completely changed my life. And I was just thinking about, cause they're actually out on tour right now, touring for their album that came out before COVID hit. And they're playing a show tonight, I believe, in Nashville, Tennessee. And I've been kind of following the tour because the great thing about them is they, you know, people don't know, they play different sets every night. You know, they different songs, different sets. They never play the same show. So they've gotten quite a following for that, almost Grateful Dead style is the way people follow them around and catch their tours because they you just never know what you're going to get. You know, I've seen them 9 times. I've probably seen over 100 different songs perform live. So, you know, that's the cool thing about them. So, just kind of a cool little anniversary to myself today, 27 years since my first Pearl Jam show. I was a young buck back then and I'm old as fuck, but,
congrats, dude.
Kind of grew up with that band. So, but yeah, this is the Rebel Radio Podcast and, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
Yeah. Just the duo tonight. And, as it might be for a little bit well, you know what? I'm going to be vague here and say for circumstances, just because, you know, Long didn't want us to make a big deal about him taking a break from the show, but it's hard not to notice that the person's not here, you know?
So I thought it's almost sounded like you did a fraudulent slip or whatever when you said circumstances. And I was like, what if he was going to say circumcises? And
I'm like, no, circumstances. I mean, yeah, maybe he's waxing his fucking balls every Friday night or something. I don't know, but
you never know.
But I mean, and Long, if he listens, which he might, he should know we're gonna fucking bust his balls. This is how we are. I can't just like let it go. That's just me. I just can't. I mean, I wouldn't be Mark if I just let it slip away. You know,
be you, man.
That's
be
right.
You be true to yourself.
But man, I will admit I am fucking tired. It's been a busy week. Middle son started baseball and, but at the same time, I'm ready to go and, discuss a pretty fucking good movie. This week, this could be one of our most rated R episodes ever because, this movie is extremely rated R. It's hard not to talk about it and talk about some of the things are in this film, but, we'll get to that in just a little bit. How are you, man? Good.
Yeah, no complaints. You know, it's been pretty nice. I had a good birthday weekend. You know, started off with a, you know, steak dinner with my wife. You know, we don't get to get out much often because tons of kids. And so that was fun. Went out Sunday, went to an Astros game, watched I've never seen a grand slam happen right in front of me. So that was really cool. And of course they won. So that's even better. Then went down to Mr. Pixels. Didn't realize, Frank, worked down there, a different Frank, Chavaria.
Oh, I didn't know he's working down there either.
Yeah. And I was like, man, he looks familiar. He's lost weight. So I was, you know, I'm trying to do the same, but, it was hard to recognize him. You know, I was like, man, he looks real familiar. And, yeah, so it was cool. The kids had fun there.
It's fun. It's just, unfortunately, he may not survive much longer. You know, he's struggling to keep the doors open.
Yeah. So. Yeah, man. So he, you know, it's, we had fun playing pinball and the boys played some Area 51. Some of the games need some work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, it's got nice getaway for a couple hours. And then, of course, went fishing, stayed out all day on a boat on Monday, caught like 25 catfish and I caught 6 of them, but they let me keep them all. And my uncle came over, helped fillet them. And I've been eating catfish for like, you know, like 3 or 4 days. it's been fun. Yeah. But I'm going to have to freeze the rest because, you know, I can't eat catfish forever.
No. That's cool, man. I hope you appreciate it. I know I didn't text you directly happy birthday, but I did say it on the show, and I had to have some fun with you on social media. I hope you got a laugh at that picture.
I did. That was funny.
I was like, I'm going to mess with Matt a little bit. And,
from when you had hair.
I was like, well, you're holding a beer, even though you can only handle two of them.
Yeah. And now I have to even go low carb. I have to get the low carb beer.
I guess. I mean, or just not drink beer.
Or just not, yeah.
I mean, because if you're going to drink fucking beer, you got to drink good fucking beer, man. And that's, most of that low carb beer shit sucks. Well, Miller Lite's okay for a low carb beer. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
But like Michelob Ultra, man, I don't know. I used to kind of like it. Now, I don't know. My taste buds changed. Now I drink it. I'm like, that's kind of gross.
Yeah. So. I had a Corona Premiere the other day, and it's okay. The wife had bought some because her friend wanted her to bring it over, and then they canceled. So we just kind of had it. And I was like, oh, that's the 2.6 grams of carb, you know, yeah. Corona. I was like, all right, tried it. Right.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll do some beer drinking this weekend since going down to Galveston. My brother-in-law usually always gets the beer, so I'm sure I'll have a little bit,
there you
little
go.
Bit to drink and see how it goes. But yeah, my week's been okay. I was looking at the calendar. I'm ready for another vacation, but I'm going the week of Halloween, so I got a little ways to go and get another break in the action. But let's get officially into the show, man, because I want to get to this film. I'm kind of excited to talk about it. But download this, where we tell people what we streamed, watched, checked out this week. I guess I'll go first, man. I haven't watched today's episode of Lord of the Rings, but I did watch the third episode, and I think the show is getting better. I really liked that third episode quite a bit. Introducing that new island kingdom and the different elements of the world they're showing. I just can't wrap my head around why people are hating on it or anything. I'm just sitting there just enjoying it for what it is, because I think it's fun, man. It seems to fit seamlessly in with Peter Jackson's films, and I think it's good so far. Stop watching the goddamn fly, Matt. People can't see us recording, but we're on video recording, and Matt keeps following a fly around his room, and it's just like, because the light keeps shining off his bald head and it's distracting.
But yeah,
bitch, I went there.
We're gonna sit back here.
But Lord of the Rings is very good so far, man. I'm enjoying it. And then I watched League of Super Pets with the kids. I actually really enjoyed that quite a bit. It was better than I thought it would be. What's funny is it got a little standard at the end, but the first hour or so of that movie is like really good. And then it got, once they formed the Super Pets team, it got pretty, like I said, pretty standard the last 30 minutes. But yeah. Some of the jokes hit real well. The voice acting was good. I actually kind of enjoyed that League of Super Pets film. I thought it was a pretty fun little movie. I don't think that I watched anything. I think that's really all I watched this week. I didn't have a lot of time to watch all other stuff with baseball starting for my son, but I did get Lord of the Rings watched, and I did watch the first episode of Cobra Kai, the new season. I know it's only the first episode, but it just feels like it feels very forced. Like the way season 4 ended and the way season 5 starts, Daniel's all like, oh, I can't be Miyagi-Do anymore, but I'm just going to bring Chosen over here and we're going to go after him. And Chosen somehow infiltrates Cobra Kai and blah, 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 blah. And it feels like the whole show is convenient for the way things happen, but this fifth season premiere felt really convenient. It's almost like they weren't sure how to continue the story. And it's just like, oh, let's – now the Miguel story is interesting, going to Mexico and looking for his dad and all that. But everything else, everything with Daniel – felt really just a little too forced, and hopefully it plays out. Like I said, I only watched the first episode. I'm still going to watch the motherfucker because I'm invested in it and I'm still enjoying the show, but it just felt like they wrote themselves maybe into a hole at the end of season 4. And it's kind of like, okay, what do we do with season 5 here? oh, let's just kind of make some shit up as we go. You know, it's kind of how I felt with the first episode. But yeah, that's it, man. That's really all I watched this week.
Okay. I finally got around to watching Thor: Love and Thunder. I didn't think it was, you know, I felt like, you know, Long, you know, made it sound like, oh man, you gotta go see it. When are you gonna go see it? You know,
oh, it's pretty bad, man. Yet.
And, it's not as good as I wanted it to be. For sure. You know, you have a director, he likes to troll, you know, he likes to troll people a lot. And so, you kind of get some, you know, quirkiness that, I don't know if it belongs in a Thor film, to the mass, extent that, you know, it happens. You know, the goats are cool. Maybe get overused after a while. Everything, you know, can't be goofy. You have to have, you know, kind of like Egon and Ghostbusters, you have to have that, the straight man, you know, and when there's no straight, you know, person that just, you know, on the straight and narrow, not talking sexuality. I'm just saying, you know, the straight man,
right.
You know, you, there's nothing really to, you know, balance out that humor. So you kind of get into what, you know, like Ghostbusters 2016 was, we can't all be goofballs. It just, you know, it just doesn't work that way. And then, you know, Thor, you know, the man bun riding around on a broomstick like he's Bette Midler or something, you know. Yeah, it just throws me off. And it made me appreciate the dark world a little bit more, you know. Yeah,
that's my big thing. Like, the first time I watched it, I initially kind of liked it. But when I rewatched it on Z+, I saw the problems with it. It's like, I don't think it has anything to do with Marvel letting Taiki be Taiki too much. I think he just did himself was a little too weird. Thor becomes a joke of himself. And I know he's supposed to be like this broken man at this point, but I'd rather see it a broken man trying to find his way than a broken man making stupid jokes of himself. You know, there's just so much I realized the second time watching it, the dialogue's really bad in places. You know, you take Valkyrie and you basically kind of dismiss her into a joke of her reforming New Asgard. And she even buys into the jokes. There's just so much. Natalie Portman she kind of mails it in. It's almost like she doesn't want to be in the film. I didn't think she was very, and I've seen her be better. And the second I watched, I realized it. It's almost like she's reading cue cards. You know, she just doesn't seem to be all that into it.
She's pedestrian for sure.
It tries to be really serious with this really dark villain, and Christian Bale does a good job. But then there's so much goofiness in it that it makes him really turn out not to be that scary.
You've got a strong villain, and you know, with everything else around it, you just don't utilize that performance.
Exactly. Ideally, he's the best part of the movie. And it's just a shame because it's like, it could have been better. And I'm really hoping that, you know, the next three movies are Black Panther, Ant-Man, and Guardians 3. So hopefully they bring Phase 4 back around to where it should be, because so far – I mean, Spider-Man was great. Doctor Strange was decent. But some of the other Phase 4 films have been – it's like Black Widow is actually pretty good in comparison to Thor 4, you know? I think Black Widow is pretty good, so we'll see. But, yeah, kind of disappointing.
Yeah. Just like you watched the first episode of Cobra Kai – and you know, it's cheesy, you know, like we expect. I do like the Mexico story, and I like how you know, what can I think of his name? Johnny.
Johnny.
God, I can't think right now. Johnny, he doesn't get had by the scam artist that Miguel runs into.
Right.
He just, you know, he's Johnny. He's always Johnny, but he's not like, you know, stupid Johnny. You know, so that's cool. And then the Chosen thing. I like Chosen.
Oh no, I'm glad he's in the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like him. And I think, you know, I hope this means we see more of him. And, you know, I'm excited to see where he goes. and how he kind of, you know, gets in with Silver, and now they're kind of like expanding on Silver's background, you know, and we'll see where it goes. You know, it's crazy that now all of a sudden Cobra Kai is like, you know, getting all this technology and stuff. You know, they're really just trying to make, you know, are we trying to like take aspects from Rocky IV, which is how I feel, because I saw a clip that kind of leaked where they're like singing Eye of the Tiger in a limo, all three, Johnny, Chosen, and Daniel, and LaRusso. And so I'm like, I wonder if this is like a Rocky IV thing, you know, it's some kind of Rocky thing going on. It wouldn't surprise me, but we'll see, you know, we'll see. I'll watch the second episode sometime in the next few days.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it.
I do feel the show needs to end. I think one more season. I think six is enough. I think it's gonna, you can only repeat some of these stories so much. And I think it needs to come to a conclusion, or you're going to ruin a good thing, you know?
Exactly. You have to find a way to make it end gracefully.
Yeah.
And can't drag it out for sure. I didn't get to watch episode 3 of Rings of Power last week, but I did watch it this week, and I liked it. I liked the third episode. I think it's going in a good direction. And man, we're getting some more fighting, some more action scenes. So I'm all for that. And let's see what episode 4. Forehead.
Man, that that orc with the damn mask on was quite creepy.
Yeah,
I really like the action scenes in it too, and things. I mean, it was good stuff. I completely forgot about the whole scene in the orc prison camp where he tries to escape. That was some really good stuff.
Oh yeah, this tree has been here since before you crawled out of the ground.
Yeah.
And then they can't stand the light. And I like, that's the armor that some of those orcs are wearing. I don't know if they're orcs or goblins.
Yeah, they're supposed to be orcs.
Yeah. Because I was like, I don't remember the orcs not being able to go into the light. You know, right. They're getting burned by the light. But it looks like the armor that Frodo and Sam were wearing when they tried to sneak around Mordor, that kind of beak, that long beak of the armor. So I like the subtle callbacks, always fun. You know, more good performances by the elf that plays Elrond, the actor that plays Durin, and Glandria, all good performances. And we get this island, you know, this, I wonder how it's going to play into the story, this island of men who got the island from elves. So that was really cool. Episode's been out for a week, so hopefully everyone's caught it. But other than that, that's really all I've watched this week.
Yeah, it's that time of the year where things get a little bit busier with school and stuff for the kids, and not as much time to watch as much stuff. That's okay. You know what I did? I was sitting down watching last Sunday morning. It's not nothing new, but man, Spirited Away, man, we got to cover Spirited Away. It might show up on the docket here before the end of the year. Just such a wonderful animated film.
Good one.
And, it's easy to watch because on HBO Max, but let's get into today's feature film. A movie that, I don't know if it might be one of our most requested films. I have had people ask us before to discuss this film. And it's one of those. It's in some ways amazing we haven't done it yet. But here we are today, covering Pulp Fiction, of course, from 1994 from Quentin Tarantino, a movie that exploded onto the scene, winning lots of awards at film festivals. And it came out in October of 94 in theaters after premiering at Cannes and other festivals that year. And Tarantino was already a bit of a known name. He had Reservoir Dogs out, and he had been a screenwriter. Of course, he did True Romance and did some screenwriting for Natural Born Killers and a few other films. But this is definitely the movie that completely put him on the map and helped with the comebacks for careers for John Travolta. And a lot of people don't know that for Bruce Willis as well. Bruce Willis's career was not doing real well when this movie came out. So it's kind of a comeback for Bruce Willis too. To summarize this film, it's inspired by the old pulp stories where different stories are blended together and they kind of come together and intertwine. And essentially you've got multiple stories in this film about different gangsters and personalities and people that all intertwine together. It's really honestly hard to describe Pulp Fiction because the weird thing about this movie is it's ultimately about nothing, which drove critics wild when it came out. They didn't know what to make of it. They liked it because it's so full of great dialogue and great scenes, but there's ultimately no real plot to this film. There's no MacGuffin. There's no central story. It's just a movie. And it's weird to think that, but a highly successful movie. A lot of people consider this amongst the great crime movies ever. It certainly was inspirational. I mean, there's still 25 years later on most people making movies, not quite 25 years.
It was 94. Oh
yeah. Almost 30. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 30 years. There's still people making movies that copy Pulp Fiction. I mean, just a few months ago, we covered Smoking Aces. That's definitely from this genre.
Amazing.
But this is the one that started it all. And I didn't see this in theaters. I don't know why. I guess I had heard about it and was like, I'll see it eventually. But I did see it pretty much as soon as it came out on video. Cause yes, kids back then you had to go to the video store and rent the film. I remember renting it and I remember watching it with my dad. And I remember my dad saying, man, there's a lot of bad language in this movie. I'm like, yeah, there is, you know?
Yep.
I think there's something like 265 F words in this movie. It is a lot. It's definitely a rated R film. It no bones about it. It's violent. It's disturbing at times. It's lots of colorful language and colorful characters. And there's a lot to talk about this movie. But when was the first time you remember seeing Pulp Fiction, Matt? Because you were still pretty young when this came out.
I don't think I saw it until I was in high school. And I think I was just, it was home after school and I was just kind of looking – scrolling through the cable channels and I saw Pulp Fiction and I think I'd seen it somewhere. You see stuff around, people talk, I think it's some kids at school had mentioned that they had seen it and talked about it at one point. And so I turned it on and watched it about my sophomore year in high school. Yeah. So I was about, 15, 16 years old, watching this film and, caught it late, of course, probably 8 years after it came out. But all I remembered was the apartment scene where Vincent Vega and forget Samuel L. Jackson's character.
Jules
are basically having a meeting with some clients that screwed over Marcellus. And I remember the adrenaline shot and I remember, I think Bruce Willis shooting up John Travolta and that's all I remembered. which kind of explains a lot, because it can seem kind of random if you're just kind of going along, you're not paying attention, seeing the big picture, but watching this movie again, you see how everything kind of interlocks and you can kind of, piece together how this movie plays out and when the time frame is. Cool seeing Harvey Keitel in the movie.
Oh, I've always loved Keitel. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie is, doesn't it tie in with Reservoir Dogs a little bit?
Well, I mean, there's rumors. Tarantino has always kind of played fiddle to fan theories that the briefcase is the same briefcase. There's any truth to it. Tarantino likes to mess with the fans. That the what's in the briefcase is a big thing, and there's the band-aid on the back of Marcellus Wallace's neck, so people say it's Marcellus's soul. There's been all kinds of rumors over the years, and Tarantino just plays into it in interviews and has fun with the fans on it,
But yeah, you've got some fucked up shit in here. Yeah.
And oh yeah.
Just the friggin' pawn shop scene. That's just crazy. And you've got a, I instantly recognize the actor. You know, I don't know his name, but he's Dorian. He plays Dorian Tyrell from The Mask. He's the sodomizer dude, Zed. And, you know, Bruce Willis, obviously kind of like a Matt Murdock senior, you know, kind of guy. He's going in, he's an over the hill boxer. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, late in his career, he's too prideful, didn't want to go down. And he took the money, got some bookies to bet his way, and, you know, boom, won big. And luckily he escapes with his life. Cause he stopped, you know, some unwanted entry in the basement.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. You know, and you made a good point about this movie. It's like, I didn't realize how much of an effect this movie did have on me to rewatch this week. Like the movie, there's scenes in this movie that you remember and they stick with you. And, because it's so well written and so well shot that you remember this stuff. And, I didn't realize how much I actually quote this movie. Like I don't know how many times I said, I'm far from fucking okay. I probably said that a lot. Or, like when John Travolta's drinking the milkshake and he's like, that's a pretty good fucking milkshake. I don't know if it's worth $5, but I've said that before with food. I'm like, that's a pretty fucking good hamburger. I mean, I didn't realize how much like I pull from this film and I've quoted it and I've said things from it. You know,
and then the bat dance. Don't you do the thing with the eyes?
No, I don't dance. I don't dance. You know, okay. But like I've even said stuff like I may not use the N word, but I said, shit, man, that's all you got to say. I know I've said that before too. Like I've quoted this movie in different ways and it has some great memorable scenes in it. Like every fucking time I watch this, the scene where they shoot Marvin and they're in the car and he's like, I'm a race car on red, man. I'm fixing a blue. And he's like, really? You're a race car on red? Well, I'm an atomic bomb, motherfucker. You guys should be in the back on brain detail. Like that scene, just I laugh at that every time, the way Samuel L. delivers it. It's just so good. When they put on the clothes and Tarantino's character, Jimmy, is like, y'all look like a couple of dorks. You have these gangster dudes wearing these goofy shorts and shirts, and they walk in there and then like, we should get my wallet. Which one is it? It's the one that says bad motherfucker. And it was a real wallet that Quentin Tarantino actually owned. It was his wallet. There's just so much to remember this movie by. And it's, I appreciate it more as I get older. I appreciate Quentin. I think Quentin is starting to be like, you know, it took a long time to get his films are an acquired taste. You know, he uses a lot of long dialogue scenes. A lot of information in those dialogues and you have to really listen to it, but he's so good at capturing the actors and their abilities that the lines are delivered that you really pay attention, whether it's Jules in this movie or Christoph Waltz's character in Inglourious Basterds or Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Kurt Russell in The Hateful Eight. He really is great about bringing out the best in these actors. And so you pay attention to the dialogue and they said that Quentin is an actor's director. You know, he really works hard to work with them. And he's starting to become more and more one of my favorite directors that I've ever watched. And I haven't really realized it because, you know, he's doing some great work and this is considered his masterpiece. It's not my personal favorite. I really like Reservoir Dogs. I also really like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood quite a bit. But I do like Pulp Fiction a lot too. You know, I don't know if it's the greatest movie ever made, like some people think it is, but I could easily put this in top 100 films ever made. No doubt. It's highly influential to lots of filmmakers all the way to now. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, how many Pulp Fiction clones have we had in the years since? I mean, many, many films. And it's all because of this movie. Some great performances from John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson all through the board.
I love their conversation about the Big Mac.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the quarter pounder with cheese is the Royale with cheese. He's like, they bring it up later.
Yeah. He's like, what's a Whopper? He goes, I don't know. I didn't go to Burger King. And that's the thing. Quentin writes, you don't realize it when you're watching, cause you're so caught up in the movie, but he writes like people talk to their buddies. Because yeah. I mean, you think about, we've all had conversation in the car or sitting in a pizza shop or whatever with our friends, just talking about random bullshit that may not seem important, but it's important to us because we're making memories with our friends or our family. And that's how Quentin writes. Quentin writes from his own experiences and the way he talks to his friends and the way they have conversations. And it comes out so well, because, you know, just because these guys are gangsters doesn't mean they're not going to not have normal conversations about hamburgers or eating pussy or giving foot massages. You know, yep. I mean, they're going to have these kind of everyday conversations just like any of us would. And that's what's cool about it. I like the fact that Quentin, like, you know, the line, some of the lines when he takes Mia out to the club, to the and everything, and we get the cameo from Steve Buscemi as a Buddy Holly. Buscemi was supposed to have a bigger part in this movie, but he couldn't work it in, so they gave him a cameo. And where she asked him, why do people feel they have to have awkward conversations? And Travolta actually ad-libbed that line. He goes, you know, that's a really good question. And Tarantino left in the movie because the way John delivered it so well. And I think that's why Tarantino's movies are violent. They're sometimes extremely hard to watch at moments, but yet they feel – this may sound weird to say, but they feel strangely comfortable. And I think it's because the way Quentin writes his scenes. You know, you get caught up in these moments of his movies. And this is the third film we've covered from him, because we've done Reservoir Dogs and Hateful Eight. And now this. I feel like, have we done any other? Well, we did True Romance, but he wrote that. I think there's only three films of his we've done that he's directed. I imagine eventually we'll get around to Kill Bill and some of his others, you know.
I know we've gotten requests for Kill Bill.
Yeah. And, but Pulp Fiction is the one that put him on the map and brought him to the masses. And he says he's only going to make 10 films. And if that's true, he's only going to make one more. But he also strikes me as the type that, he might get that bug and do more than 10 films. It just depends on how he's feeling, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he kind of hinted already. He said if he did a Star Trek film, which I don't think he's going to do now, he said it wouldn't have counted towards his 10. So that tells me right now that he has it in him to do more than 10. This movie, like I said, I really enjoy rewatching this week. I realize how good it is, how well acted it is, how well shot it is, and how much it did have an effect on me. Maybe not quite the same effect that, say, Star Wars or Batman 89 had on me. But I think this had a very profound effect on an older Mark as I was getting older in high school and realized how movies went from space sagas and superheroes to starting to watch more mature films, if that makes sense, you know, by watching a movie like Pulp Fiction and appreciating films like this and their stature. Because I was never a crime movie kid growing up, but I think now I tend to watch more movies like this. I like Pulp Fiction and movies. And it's just, I feel like this movie could be talked about a lot. It's definitely studied. It's studied in film schools. It used to bug me how it's shot nonlinear or edited nonlinear, where the story's not told in order. But I appreciate that more now because I understand what Quentin was trying to do with the whole pulp magazine type style of storytelling. And like you said, the more you watch it, you can kind of piece it together and how it works. The performances are so good. You know, Ving Rhames is so calm, cool, and badass in this movie. It's like he's willing to fuck anybody up at any moment. But then when he gets – but then we never even see him angry until he gets fucked up, literally. And then he tells him, you hear me, hillbilly boy? I'm just like – you don't even have to see what happens to know that that guy was in a lot of fucking trouble.
I'm going to call some guys with some blow torches and some pliers.
Yeah, I'm going to call some hard-hitting motherfuckers. You know? And it's like, it's one of those parts, I can't even imagine anyone else in the part, you know, than Ving Rhames, because he pulls it off so well. Any other thoughts you have on Pulp Fiction, man?
Man, no, I just, you know, you have some really good conversations. I think, you know, the conversations you probably remember the most is the the quarter pounder and the foot massage, because it's just elaborated on so much, that, you know, I went ahead and I had a Royale with cheese today. just cheese and pickles.
It's funny you said that while recording, because guess what I had today?
Oh, my God.
I had a Royale with cheese, too. I'm not lying. I really did. The kids wanted McDonald's. The kids wanted McDonald's after a baseball practice, so I got me a quarter pounder.
Nice. Hell yeah. I love how Samuel L. Jackson says it. He just says it so cool. You know, everything he says is cool. And then he reads the Bible and he's like, if anyone were to harm my brothers.
Which is strange, because it's actually not as verbatim quote. They change it up some. And we didn't even talk about the diner scene that connects the movie at the beginning with Tim Roth and Amanda Plummer, who are great in their roles as Honey Bunny and I can't think of his name. And just even their line of dialogue, the way they deliver everything when he's sitting at the table with him and he tries to rob Vince and Jules because they go for breakfast after their ordeal with Marvin. And he's like, it's just the way Samuel delivers it. Vince is like, why are you giving that money? He goes, I'm not giving that money. I'll buy it his life, you know, because he could have shot him right there. You know, and it's just like, it's just such, God, there's just so many great scenes in this film. And I think that's why it works so well. And I just really glad we finally got to do it in this movie. And I appreciate the movie so much more now years later than I did maybe at the time. And it holds up extremely well. Like, it feels like watching a fresh, brand new film. And I feel that way about a lot of Quentin's films. I feel like all of his movies feel like, you know, Quentin does a great job. You could play these movies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Even up to now, his movies can play in any era. And I think he's really great at that. And it's because he's such a film nerd himself. He's watched all these movies from the 40s, 50s, 60s, different eras, that he's able to put those ideas into his films and make movies that can stand the test of time. And his movies aren't for everybody. I mean, some people don't like these ultra-violent, heavy, bad language films, and that's okay. You know, but as film buffs, you know, I appreciate him. I really like his movies.
Yeah. His movies, him as a writer, and even though some people knock on him as an actor, you know, even I enjoy him as an actor.
He's fine in this. He does his character in The Hateful Eight does take me out of the movie a little bit, because he had gained some weight at the time. He was going, I believe he was going through his divorce, and things weren't well for him. And he kind of mails in his performance in Hateful Eight, and it shows. It's kind of bad. And he's even talked about that. He knows it wasn't that good. But as Jimmy in this, he's fine. I think he's hilarious. He's like, this is fucked up, man. You can't just bring this guy to my fucking house. And if my fucking wife walks in here, I mean, I think he's great, you know, because he's pissed off, but he knows.
Yeah.
But here he is. He's going toe-to-toe with Jules and Vince, who are badass gangsters. But Jimmy's like, I don't fucking care, man. You're not going to do this in my fucking house, you know. And he's good in the movie, you know. And he's fine. Even when he was in Desperado, he's fine. From Dusk Till Dawn, whatever. You know, Quentin does fine. You know, I don't have a problem with his acting.
Another movie about feet, Dusk Till Dawn. He drinks drinks yes, liquor.
Quentin does tend to have a feet thing.
Yeah. Man.
A little funny. Go ahead.
Yeah, the budget was $8 million, and it made $100 million in the U.S. box office and $200 million worldwide.
Yeah, so very successful,
real successful.
And a little interesting fact in the scene where Eric Stoltz's character is sitting eating cereal, and it looks like Fruit Loops. It's actually not Fruit Loops. It's called Fruit Brute. It's a cereal that's only sold at Halloween. And it hadn't been out for years, and they actually brought it back this year. It's part of the Frankenberry line of Halloween cereals. Wow. And Quentin had kept – he has a box he had kept all these years. And it's in the background in a couple of his movies. I guess it's in that, and I believe maybe Jackie Brown or something. It's in a couple of his movies in the background, the Frankenbrute cereal, whatever it's called, or Fruit Brute. So that's kind of a little funny thing there. We even talk about Christopher Walken, man. I mean, he comes in just one scene of the movie, and he he was another one of the actors that only had time to film so much. So he came in for a scene. And, of course, it's the famous watch scene about carrying a watch up his ass throughout Europe and all that. And it's played for kind of humor, but also serious, because it goes back to Bruce Willis's character later when he's looking for the watch. And he ends up having to go back to his apartment. And he runs into Vincent, and he ultimately kills Vincent. That scene is quite funny. And he's talking to this kid about carrying a watch in the ass. He hands him watching the kid. The kid's just kind of looking at it like, what? Yeah, it's fucking, you know, a watch that was up your ass the whole time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, carried it up your ass.
Just another great performance in the movie from Walken, even though it's a brief one. It was definitely a big comeback for John Travolta. This put him back on the map. He went on to a run of hit movies after this. From this to Phenomenon to Face Off to other films he did. Broken Arrow, of course, with John Woo. You know, he went on to bring his career back. You know, Bruce Willis, despite the Die Hard films, he wasn't having a lot of success at this time. And he didn't want to do this movie. And his Tarantino called him up personally and talked him into doing it. And Bruce was a fan of Reservoir Dogs. He's like, okay, I'll do it. And Bruce later on was glad he did it, because it helped resurrect his career as well. It made me a little sad watching it, seeing Bruce and know where he is now and unable to continue to act. It was cool to see him in this movie. Another strange fact of this movie is Samuel L. almost didn't play Jules. It was supposed to be the guy who he makes an appearance. He's Marcellus Wallace's like assistant, and he comes up to him in the bar and tells him something. I can't think of the actor's name. He was originally going to be cast as Jules, but something occurred, so they end up using Samuel L. and he gave the other guy a small part in the movie. But it's like, okay. This just like, it's one of those movies where the roles are so good, I can't imagine anyone else in any of these parts.
No, heck no.
It's just so well done. I have to say, this is easily an A+. I think there's no other rating to give this movie. And rewatching it this week, I might put this in a top 20 list of my favorite movies and even realize it. Because like I said, I realize how much I quote it and how much I remember it and how much it might have some of my favorite scenes of any movie, you know, especially of any crime film. You know,
iconic scenes.
Yeah. Oh, it's an iconic movie. There's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, it's... If you go post 1990, it's easily a top five film, you know, of all time in the last, you know, almost 30 years, easily, you know, might be the number one in the last 30 years. I mean, there's some films there you could argue, you know, Saving Private Ryan, Titanic, The Return of the King, you know, I mean, but all three or four of those movies could be number one and nobody would argue with you, you know, as far as masterpieces in the last 30 years, you know? I mean, Mad Max, you can make a list of the last 30 years and you could say Pulp Fiction, Titanic, Saving Private Ryan, Mad Max Fury Road, and Return of the King. And no one would argue with you those five films of being the best five films of the last 30 years. And there's probably movies we're leaving out, you know? I mean, I think Pan's Labyrinth could be in that list of the last 30 years. I mean,
probably
something else I'm not even thinking about from the last few years, you know? The Hurt Locker was a great film in the last 30 years. And we're kind of getting on a tangent here, but I'm just trying to compare Pulp Fiction to modern masterpieces, easily, you know, a modern masterpiece. And, if you've never seen Pulp Fiction and you're a film fan, you're doing yourself a disservice. You need to watch this movie. It's on HBO Max. It's streaming there right now. And it's usually pretty cheap. It's usually $5 on Vudu or $8 in the Blu-ray bins and Walmart or whatever. So it's not hard to find this film. In fact, watching HBO Max makes me want to, I don't own this on Blu-ray. I have it on DVD and okay. I kind of want to own it in high definition now and buy a copy of it. So I might have to do that or find 1.5-price books for cheap and get on Blu-ray. So, but A+, we definitely both agree.
A+.
Pulp Fiction, modern masterpiece, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, let's get to some news, because there's a lot to talk about with D23 going last week. We'll do some non-D23 first. Amazon has ordered Blade Runner 2049 to series. This had been rumored a couple years ago. I remember reading about this. Amazon had bought the rights to Blade Runner and was talking about doing a series, and Ridley Scott was going to be involved, and they picked up the series. So it looks like that's going to come true. No word on who's going to be in it, of course. Didn't Ryan Gosling's character die at the end of 2049, right? Yeah, because he drowned. So. Yeah, he drowns. Yeah. And I don't think Harrison Ford is going to be coming back to playing Deckard. I'm sure it'll be just a play off of what happened. Yeah. But, you know, I like that world. You know, I really do. So I think it'd be cool to see some more science fiction from the world of Blade Runner. I'm not the biggest fan of the films. Like, I like them. I appreciate them. But I do like that world that Ridley Scott created. I think it's a cool science fiction world. So we'll see what they do with that. Warner Brothers is developing a Constantine sequel for Keanu Reeves. This is good news because, you know, that movie's pretty decent. And, you know, Keanu has said many times he's willing to come back. And I think it's time that we finally give it. So hopefully this gets in development, and maybe we get that Constantine sequel. And let's just hope it's better than The Matrix Resurrections was, you know, as far as Keanu Reeves' legacy sequels go. The new Quantum Leap is hitting ABC soon, and don't look for Scott Bakula to be making an appearance on that anytime soon. He said, nope, I'm done with it. I was there once. I don't need to come back and do it again. Wow. And I think that's okay. I don't really have a problem with that. Well, you know, because, you know, people say, oh, they ruined the original, blah, blah, blah. No, they didn't. The original still exists. And I haven't seen the new one, and but it just didn't look that interesting to me. So,
yeah. Wouldn't it – I think it would be cool. Remember whenever – he jumped, and there was an episode where there was another quantum leaper in the original series, and they kind of had to work together. They had like similar and conflicting needs that they had to meet in order to jump to the next one. And man, wouldn't it be cool if he's still jumping, and he's, you know, and then he jumps into the next, you know, and, you know, story where he's intertwined with another leaper, you know,
right.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely ways to do it. But if he doesn't want to, you know, then he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
So, right. So some D23 news here, the leader is finally going to come back in the MCU. You know, it's funny, you see these lists online and they always will have like, post-credit scenes that never played out, right? Yeah. Especially the MCU. And the leader was one of them. We had him introduced in The Incredible Hulk that what's his name gets the stuff from the brain, and he never came back. But they announced at D23 that he will be the villain in Captain America 4. So I think that's kind of cool. It's like finally coming back to that. Because I always thought that was one of the cool parts of The Incredible Hulk. I was like, well, they're going to introduce the leader. That'll be badass. He's normally a Hulk villain. But are they throwing hints that the Hulk's going to appear in Captain America 4? Could be.
Could be.
Because, yeah, could be. So we'll see. Man, I cannot read my own. Oh, they also announced a cast of the Thunderbolts. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I guess it's.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how Taskmaster and Ghost and something are all going to play into that. You know, I guess it's kind of Marvel's version of Suicide Squad in kind of a way. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll
see.
Yeah, we'll see. I was a little – we'll talk about it in a minute. We also got trailers for Secret Invasion, which I thought looked really cool, but I also feel like – almost feel like Secret Invasion should have been Nick Fury's movie, you know, that Samuel's been wanting to get for years. I feel like just the trailer looked great. But I felt like that's a big story. Like it's bigger than a TV show. You know, I just felt like I'm starting to feel like they're trusting in these TV shows too much. And I just feel like Secret Invasion could have made for a really good movie and given Samuel Jackson's Nick Fury a chance to really stand out. So hopefully the show is good though. We also got a trailer for their first Halloween special, which comes out October 7th, pretty soon. Werewolf by Night. Look kind of cool. Like it's kind of shot like an old black and white film. A little scary for Marvel too. Even the trailer was kind of frightening in parts. I watched it with the kids and my 7-year-old was like, I'm not watching that, Dad. That looks scary. I was like, yeah, it did look a little frightening. But yeah, I feel we'll get to the Star Wars news from D23 in just a second, but I feel like we talk about Thor, we talked about Spider-Man No Way Home. Does it feel like a mistake that there's no Spider-Man 4 announcement or a Thor 5 announcement? It feels like the way they ended Thor, where Thor is still broken and disappointed, even though he found this little girl, and poor Peter Parker is out there with no one remembering him. Are we going to leave these characters hanging for years? I mean, and then not only that, Tom Holland ain't getting any younger. You know, it's like
he's not.
So I felt like I was wanting more from their announcements at D23 on the Marvel side, but I guess it is what it is. As far as Star Wars news, it seems that Patty Jenkins' Rogue Squadron has been taken off the schedule, which we kind of all felt this, that it seemed like that was going to happen, as they're not sure. They seem more interested in making Star Wars TV shows right now than movies. Rian Johnson still wants to make his Star Wars trilogy, but even he said it seems that Disney just doesn't want to do it at this moment. So not surprised there, but we did get trailers for Tales of the Jedi animated series, which I thought looked really cool. It's only, I guess it's like 6 shorts or something, but it looked pretty neat. And yeah.
Young Mace Windu.
Yeah.
You know,
some cool characters, young Dooku, some neat stories they could tell there. We got a new trailer for the Bad Patch season 2, which I haven't finished season 1. So for me, it's like, okay, that's cool. But the big trailer, of course, was The Mandalorian season 3, as we finally get to continue Mando and Grogu's story. And got to wait till February for it, though. That's the only thing. It's not coming out in December like we were hoping. But we've got Andor here next week to tie us over. And I'm kind of looking forward to Andor. So, but the Mando season 3 looked awesome.
Yeah, it was a fun trailer. Everyone's back for the most part. And man, we get I guess it's going to be a battle for the ownership of Mandalore.
Yeah, I think that was the cool part. It looks like we're going to get to finally see Mandalore on the big screen. And I thought that was like, I'm like, okay, I'm sold on this. No, it looked really great. So Mandalore season 3 coming in. Oh, and then we also got a trailer for Willow. And I know Long always wants to bash on Willow, but man, I thought it looked great. Honestly, I thought that trailer was really good. I'm like, mm-hmm. Man, I'm excited to watch Willow. And another movie we need to cover. We haven't made out our list for the rest of the year, so we might have to skip. We might have to put Willow in there maybe the week the movie comes out or close to it, because it's such a good movie. I really enjoy Willow quite a bit. So that's all the news I had. It was a lot. We covered it kind of quickly, but that's okay. We spent a lot of time on the feature film today because that was a big movie to talk about. Fun one, man. I really like talking Pulp Fiction. So next week, man, we're going to go complete opposite direction of Pulp Fiction to kind of a goofy 80s film. Definitely a cult classic. Has a cult following. Have you ever seen this movie, Matt?
I don't think so.
You never seen it? It stars Mark Singer. And that is The Beastmaster.
It was foretold by witches. It was conceived through sorcery. And it was to be destroyed by all that is evil. But the courage of one mortal saved it. And so, into an age of darkness, in a time of mysticism, sacrifice, and plunder, there came the only light, the Beastmaster. Born with the strength of a black tiger, the courage of an eagle, the power that made him more than any hero. More than any lover. He was lord and master over all beasts. He was the Beast Master. Behold the wonder, the horror, the fantasy, the challenge of the one warrior they called the Beast Master. Mark Singer is Dar. Tanya Roberts is Carrie. Rip Torn is Mayak. John Amos is Seth. Together, they take us on a fascinating journey back into unexplored times. Conquer your fears. face the unknown and discover the incredible link between man, animal, and all that is phantasmagorical. In the world of Dungeons, Dragons, and Dar, the Beastmaster, the epic adventure of a new kind of hero.
This movie is probably one of the more popular sort of sorcery cult classics. It's one of those movies that if you haven't seen them at, when you do go to watch it, you'll probably think, oh, I've seen scenes from this before. It's just one of those movies. You might not like it because it is another one of those nostalgic type films, but I think you can appreciate it because you're a fan of Arnold's Conan movies and things like that. So I think you'll appreciate where this movie comes from.
I've seen the TV series, but
yeah, there was a TV series. Yeah. Based on, but the movie's pretty, it's been a while since I've watched this. So I don't know how well it holds up, but it's something we've had on the burner for a while. We've kind of, I think we moved this movie backwards on the list about three or four times just this year. We keep saying, oh, let's do the Beastmaster. We haven't done it. So we're going to do it next week. Finally. So it'll be a fun one to talk about on next week's show. But, yeah, that's it, man. Until then though, the rebelradiopodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs, and continue to stay safe. And as always, thanks for listening, and hope you enjoyed this week's episode, man, as much as we enjoy bringing it to you. But until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.